All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to a podcast Odyssey. Today I've got Cyber, True Knowledge, and Renee, aka Loki's mom. She's been on the show before. Cyber and True Knowledge have always been with me since the last couple of Mondays, probably about a month straight, right? At least 2 months now. It feels like it's been
we are Groot.
I feel like it's been 2 months. Okay, well. Anyways, today we are going to be talking about a really, really good movie. Actually, a favorite of mine called Interstellar. And I think everybody got to watch it before we did the podcast, right, guys?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, so now he wants to let me know that this is one of his favorites. He didn't want to say anything about that to me when I brought it up last week.
Did I? I may not have said it, but I did say it was a really good movie. I did. All right. It is one of my favorite movies that I enjoyed. Before I started, I told Cyber the same thing, that I enjoy movies that are science fiction movies in general, just anything about space, time travel, aliens.
That's all Renee's shit too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah, those are my thing, you know. Those are the movies I love. I actually saw it the day it came out.
Wow. You are lucky then, sir, because I did not see it in theater. Unfortunately, this was still during like my first life, when I had a career and custody of my daughter and everything and whatnot. I was a busy guy. I didn't go to the movies very much. But I wish I would have saw it in the theater. You're very lucky. I'm envious of you, to you. And that's awesome that you really enjoy the movie that much, because I do too. So it's nice to know that my friend, J Rent 2000, feels the same way I do about Interstellar.
Absolutely. Guys, Cyber, tell me about what you like about it before we.
I like mostly about this film. I like the concept. I thought the whole concept was really interesting. You know, world basically dying, just like a lot of sci-fi films I really enjoy. This has a really great story, about that. And the visuals of this film were so well done, and I think that's one of the reasons that really caught my eye when I saw the trailer for the first time, is the fact that the visuals were just so extensively done. And Nolan is always good about bringing that kind of great quality to his films, so I think that's really the biggest reason I liked this film in any form or aspect.
For sure, without a doubt. Renee, some of the basics that I guess that I would say that you like about the movie.
It's like Cyber says, it's hard science fiction. I mean, Nolan, he really puts a lot of effort and research and everything in anything he does, you know, with these types of movies. And not quite as mind bendy as some of his other movies. I think this one's more grounded.
For the most part.
Yeah, it's a family drama that's set within this outer space, whatever it is, going to another. Actually, I think they're going to another galaxy. I think the wormhole goes into another galaxy, which is way, way, way far away from where we're at, as opposed to say like the next star, which is like 1,000 light years away or something like that. But anyway, yeah, I think we don't see a lot of hard science fiction now. We see a lot more fantasy and a lot more just action, superhero, that type of film. So just to get to see a movie that does dwell more on the science side of it, and something that's a lot of it's, you know, sort of possible, you know, building space stations and building those habitat, things like that, and going to say, and maybe the possibility of that there's a wormhole out there somewhere, because I think it is in science. I think they call it Einstein-Rosen bridge. That it's something they theorized many, many decades ago, and now we're sort of realizing, and the science has sort of, mainstream science has sort of caught up to these theorists, and we're seeing the possibilities of, and you know, just what, I think even before this movie was, I mean, this movie was made before they actually, if it wasn't Kepler, it was another space telescope that got an image of some kind of a black hole, which I think is interesting. So yeah, they're out there. not that long ago, and I can remember when they didn't know if black holes were real or not. And now we do know that, yes, they are real.
Jeff, you still with us?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
He's looking up black holes.
Are you on YouTube right now?
No, I was pulling up the show.
Oh, I'm just kidding with you.
No. I got in the habit of doing it from based off of you and Liz and whatnot. Like, you know, now I do it all the time. I just pull up the show.
If I were to ask you to tell us what the movie is about from beginning to end in a small phrase right now, could you do that?
Yeah, can you do that in
30 seconds? Tell me what the movie's about.
But can you give me just 1 second just to briefly just say what I like about the film and why I enjoy it real quick? Because I just wanted to bounce up.
Didn't you say that? Weren't you the first one?
Well, sort of. Real quick. Yes. I just wanted to bounce off Renee in that we have plenty of time to talk about the film and the genre and all that and whatnot, and, you know, why we really enjoy certain scenes. But for me, even though this is an older film from 2014, it is nice to watch a film that's really good like this, a really high quality film. That's something I really enjoy and find to be like challenging and impressive. And like,
is this from 2014?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And honestly break up some of this monotony with the MCU dominating like the entire film industry. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not sick of the MCU or Marvel, but at the same time, as a in general, somebody who likes movies and quality movies and likes other stuff other than the MCU and Marvel, it's nice to see some films that are actually solid and, like, you know, legitimate films that are fun and entertaining that are different. Even if it is an older film, I guess, right? So if anything, I think Interstellar is one of those ones where it doesn't matter how many times you put it in and watch it, it's always kind of enjoyable, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. So
now,
there's a lot to it, and there's a lot. Yeah. It's one of those movies that when you see it the second, third, even fourth time, you find something new in it.
So it's definitely a movie. It's definitely a different class, you know, from the superheroes. You know, I don't even want to bring those up because this is a whole different genre, different type of movie. If you want to bring up movies that are comparable to it, let's talk about like 2001 Space Odyssey. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a time travel movie, you know, because this has some type of time travel, you know, scenario in it.
This movie has so many elements. Jay Rand, this movie has so many different elements in it that it's almost hard to quantify.
What's going on, John? Yeah, I mean, there is some research that went into this movie, you know, for the example with the black hole and talking about time and space and the idea of how it would work, and, you know, so there's a lot of sciencey stuff in it.
They wanted to be the Nolan brothers wanted it to be authentic. They did not want to be. They didn't want to fake the shit. They wanted to not be as fake as possible. If they could try to, you know, have what the premise of the film could be as authentic as possible, they wanted it to be. So they made an effort to reach out to acclaimed scientists.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. For their theories and their visions and whatnot, I guess, if it's the right way to say it. But you wanted me to basically like summarize the film in 30 seconds? Well, it's very simple. The Earth is dying. Yep. The Earth is essentially dying. It's not habitable anymore for the human race. They cannot survive there. Coop, the astronaut / farmer / dad of Murph, is brought in by like what's left of NASA and, you know, to lead this mission. Essentially to like save the human race. You know, as that plays out across the span of the film, there's some, you know, ups and downs and whatnot and everything. And there's some discoveries of some different things that they weren't, you know, aware of before they set out for the plan. And it ends up wrapping up into a situation where things that occurred in the beginning of the film between father and daughter, Murph and Coop, and whatnot, ended up becoming like tied into the end. You know what I mean? Directly to where, you know, essentially, there's almost like it's almost hard to explain the ending, but basically the ending ends up, you know, playing out to where, you know, Coop goes into the unknown, you know what I mean? You know, dives into the black hole, gargantuan or whatever, whatnot, or whatever it is. And essentially, goes back in time and space or whatever and whatnot, and ends up solving the crisis on Earth through Murph, through like communicating through time and space.
I see. Yeah. So you kind of going into some details. The movie is basically Earth is dying, like you said, and they are sending travelers into this black hole to find a new planet to colonize, to live.
Yeah.
And there is some, you know, drama that happens between that I guess the part of that story. And it's up to us to watch the movie to see if they save humanity, because Earth is dying. That's the whole thing. Earth is dying. And Cyber, question for you. Let me ask you.
Yes, sir.
So what is in the movie? You know, we got to see that intro. We got to see, like, they did that little opening where it was like a history channel of the people talking about, like, the almost like the Dust Bowl type of scenario where the bowl was on the plates, and they did an interesting opening with that. And then we also see him as an astronaut in the stratosphere passing out. I guess part of like what happened to him when he was in space.
Yep.
Right. What was destroying the planet? It had something to do with the oxygen.
The blight. The blight.
That's what it was the blight, right? The
blight. Yes.
Yeah. Everything was, whatever it was, it infected all organic plant life.
Correct. All the plant life. Thanks, Cyber. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay. Renee, I'll ask you this. what did you think of that scene where, he's got a really intelligent daughter. It was kind of interesting how they did it with like the school system, the structure was set up. Like it's either like you're smart and you become a scientist, or you're average and you're just a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that concept that they did there?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, because we're looking at what we would call a dystopian future.
Yes.
There's obviously, I think Coop makes mention of when he was a child, there was a lot more starvation or something. So that maybe there was a cataclysm of some kind, a war, who knows what it was. They don't really say. But the Earth's kind of settled down a little bit at this point when we join the story. But even so, it's there's not a lot of people left. Not a lot of resources left. There's no money left. I mean, who's buying anything? It's you grow corn and that's it. So, I mean, education is at that point pragmatic. You know, he didn't make the scores. We need people who can take us, do the NASA project, or figure out how we're going to, you know, cure the blight. We need to train those, the smartest people we can for that, our resources on that, rather than someone who might not do it. And the kid sort of, I guess he takes it okay. I don't think it really doesn't go in there. And it was a young Timothy Chalamet, I point out.
Yes. Timothy Chalamet, right there.
Dune, Paul Untiri's. Anyway. But then she benches the teacher, and then he gets really upset when she, we're teaching now that the moon was a hoax because we don't want to. You know, of course, apparently she believes that it was a hoax too, because they don't want to give people hope or something. I don't exactly know why they.
No,
why they
I don't think.
I thought
no,
it was
she
a
did.
Weird insertion, but yeah.
It wasn't her that didn't believe that the moon landing was faked. It was the school systems teaching the kids that was a hoax for propaganda. It's kind of funny because then he gets mad. You know, he goes to the school and he mentions that some of the machines created by NASA, if they would have been available, they could have saved his wife's life. And they go to that Yankees game and they see average players. They don't have like hot dogs. They have to eat popcorn because that's all that's left. And then it was like the blight, right? That was like almost like a Dust Bowl type scenario that they keep giving to us.
You know what had caused it in reality, J-Rat? The blight was caused by being run by the Democratic Party for so long. Like, that's what ended up happening. Like, for some reason, people kept voting Democrat over and over again, and we ended up with a bunch of douchebags, and that brought the blight.
Wow, I didn't know that, Jeff.
Well, that's real interesting, Jeff. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, it actually makes a lot of sense.
About going back to the Dust Bowl and the little vignettes, the little history things. Those were drawn directly from Ken Burns' documentary called The Dust Bowl, with the exception of Ellen Burstyn, who's one of the talking heads we see at the beginning. All those other people are actual people who were interviewed who had lived through the Dust Bowl era. And if you ever get a chance to see the Dust Bowl, I guess it's probably on PBS. You can pull it up somewhere. But yeah, I mean, those are I'm assuming he partnered with Ken Burns and got the cuts. But those are real people talking about that.
What'd you think of that whole thing, J-Rant? What did you think of that opening like that they went in that direction? I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, no, I loved it. And you know what? It told me Dust Bowl without having to tell me Dust Bowl, because that information that Renee just gave me, I didn't know that. I thought these were just actors for the film. But if that's real, those are real clips from real people who lived through that. That's amazing. You know,
I had actually seen the documentary before I saw this. I'd probably come out a couple years before on television. And when I saw that in the movie, I was like, bam. I mean, it was like, I knew exactly where it was coming from. So yeah, very interesting tie-in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What did you guys think? I asked with you, Cyber, about gravity leading them to NASA.
Gravity leading them to NASA.
Remember the ghost in our bedroom?
Yes, yes, yes. I thought that was okay. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of that. They start off with all that, true knowledge, going on the beginning of it with, the Dust Bowl and everything like that. True knowledge. And, then they go to this whole, that kind of, ghost aspect. And I was kind of like, some people believe in it, some people don't. I mean, if you want to keep it as accurate, I get it. If you don't want to keep it accurate, you put in the ghost. I get that. And to give it a little more flavor, as I like to call it. And I thought it was okay. It wasn't my favorite part of the film. But definitely it added to the story. And overall, it wasn't bad. It wasn't super bad. I just wasn't really into it.
You didn't like how it led them to the to NASA. When he got there, they're like, how did you find us? Nobody finds NASA. Type scenario. Okay. I see what you're saying. Renee, what do you think?
About the scene or about gravity?
I guess the scene and the idea of, well, okay, let's just kind of zoom out and look at it this way. So that scene is important because it was him after he went into the black hole, and that's how he was reaching his daughter. So I guess that scene is very important.
Yeah. Well, what I got from it, and if you probably hear it throughout the movie, and they talk about inside Gargantua, the singularity, and that's a singularity is, from my understanding, I've read pop science. I'm not a physicist or anything like that, but I've read enough of the side books, Carl Sagan type stuff, and watch the TV show.
Heck yeah.
I love those shows. A singularity is when all gravity is collapsed into a single point. So all space-time, so if gravity and space-time are affect each other and are kind of like a Morbius strip type, if you kind of think of it that way, on either side of each other, but as it shrinks and shrinks and shrinks, and the gravity itself just pulls everything right into where it becomes almost nothing. And the interesting thing about that is that, and this is what Stephen Hawking, if you've ever seen his documentary, anything like that, he talks about a lot, and that was that, if you think of a singularity as Big Bang as a singularity, if you could shrink it all the way back, and gravity and all gravity and all space time is all now one at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll make an allusion to Marvel Comics, because they deal with it by calling it the quantum realm. I think we maybe can relate to that a little bit more. That's what I think they're talking about there in a literary way, in a sci-fi literary way, that time and everything is right then at that singularity. So what made it possible? Once Coop went into the he and Tars went into singularity, he was able to, through his own memories, connect inside that what they called a Tesseract.
The Tesseract.
And then he was able at that point, his time was shrunk down to where he was actually able to connect with the time that his daughter, what's her name again?
Murph.
I, well, how in the world could I forget that? Murph.
Murph. Murphy's Law. Murphy's Law.
Yeah, Murphy's Law. Where he's able to actually connect with Murph when she's actually thinking in the same term. She's trying to communicate. So that's the ghost. That's the ghost in the system is actually, we can think of it as, if you want to spread, go out into a cultural tribal way, this is how they would communicate with their spirits, because they're traveling in, astrally projecting themselves into that space-time singularity where everything has already happened, is happening, and will happen at one time, and you can go and pinpoint what you want to focus on and go there. So in some ways, that's the time travel sort of bendy idea to it, and I hope I didn't blow everybody's mind on that.
Jeff, follow that up.
Yeah, Jeff, please explain that.
If I can make that work for myself, I'd like to pinpoint the time in history when I almost hit like a couple of chicks back in the day, but I felt bad and didn't. And I would go back, I would smash that shit no matter what.
Yeah, well, instead of sand, it would be something else. Be dripping from the ceiling. So.
I would remind my young self, stop being such a white knight and crush that shit.
Jeff, you a white knight?
Back when I was like 13, 14 years old, and I was like scared to have sex and like all that and whatnot. And I was like, you know, I guess I was overly ethical, you know.
You've been having sex probably since you've been able to give it up, probably.
Well, 13 is when I started, yeah. But like, you know, you know what I mean? But
Jeff, your chivalry when you were a teenager has nothing to do with Interstellar.
No, it doesn't. No.
How did you know that?
But I think it had to do with the Dark Knight idea that Christopher Nolan directed that.
No, so but
unless you're the Joker.
You know what another white knight, you know.
the actress that plays the young Murph is really good in this movie.
Very
She's great.
Good. Yeah,
she's outstanding.
She's a very good little actress.
Her name is Mackenzie something.
Mackenzie
Foy.
She looks like a Mackenzie.
Yeah, well, she's a grown woman now, so.
Yeah, and then Ellen Burstyn is the elderly Murph, and then Jessica Chastain is the
Murph.
Scientist and Murph.
Let's not forget about the music in this movie.
Oh, Hans Zimmer, baby.
He just, I mean, knocks it out of the park, and it just makes every scene so intense too. I mean, just like, you know, it's exciting.
He's using that Woolwich. I don't know if it's a Woolwich or what type of organ, but I mean, it's probably a real pipe organ that he's going to and using, mm-hmm. pulling that crescendo. And it's an allusion to
he's using those
to 2001.
You're
they
right.
Used a lot of organ.
It is. It's pipe organs for sure. I saw a. Sometimes I want to say it's a documentary. Maybe it's a documentary too that I see. Maybe we saw the same one. I don't know, but they showed them making the music to this, and I mean, just amazing.
I'm trying to hire Hans right now to do the soundtrack for some of my private movies, my private videos.
I don't think he does like 25-second songs.
Yeah.
Boy,
cum shots. Yeah, that's all we need.
You're crushing me with that shit, man.
I'm just playing, man. I'm sure you can go all night, dude. I'm sure you're just a fucking animal. Just
No, you know what? Believe it or not, I actually experienced legit erectile dysfunction the other night. Could not.
Okay, guys, let's talk about the movie.
So it even happens to true knowledge, baby.
Thank you, I appreciate it. You know what? Let me go to the man over here, right next to me, Cyber. All right. So we got to the part where they're in space. We might have skipped a few steps, but when they're in space, you know, and they're floating aimlessly, and they're going on their journey. And then they make it, you know, they go past, I think it was past Saturn is where the black hole was at. They finally get there. And when they go through that black hole or that time warp or whatever it was, what did you think of that scene? Like, just the visuals, like, when they, you know, they started warping them through and they did that whole, like, everything, stars passing them by. Like, just that.
That was super visually awesome. It was so well done, and it was just a cool like representation of what it could really be like if we actually were able to travel through black holes. Now this black hole they happen to call Gargantua, and when they went through Gargantua, it was beautiful. It like, imagine if you're like sitting, you know, like laying down or something, and like when you close your eyes and if you put your hands over your eyes. Sometimes, like as a kid, I would do that, and I could see like different like shapes and stuff like that, mm-hmm. or like spots and stuff like that. And
I don't know if that's good for your eyes.
It could be. Who knows? It could be a brain thing. I don't know. But I just remember it happening when I was, you know, tried it out when I was younger. And
I did too.
And so that visualization is what this going through this wormhole was like for me. It like brought back those memories, and I how visually pleasing it was. That's what it made me think of. Like, it felt like reality. Like, I was really going through a black hole. It was just beautifully done, and I thought they did a really good job with that. That was made the film very entertaining.
Yeah, without a doubt. Renee, what did you think about that scene?
Yeah, we've seen them before. You know, I think Contact has the another great movie, kind of with McConaughey in it, by the way. Where he goes into Jodie Foster falls into whatever, and with the machine that they built and that the aliens had sent to them from, you know, Vega, wherever it was at.
What movie is this again? Which one? I'm sorry. I think you said it, but I was looking at Jeff.
I'm sorry. But anyway, yeah. The whole the way they did it in this film, I mean, you know, who knows what a wormhole would look like. At that point, you know, it's up to the creative talents of the directors and art directors and special effects people. So, yeah, I agree with Cyrus. You know, it was like, you know, I would do the same thing as a kid, you know, kind of poke your eyes on little different places and get little lights. And then if you take your hands away and then watch how the whatever it is in your eyeballs, in your brain, it's going swirling around. And you kind of, oh, yeah. So absolutely. Yeah. And then when they hit the singularity, they hit Gargantua, because from my understanding that the wormhole is an extension from Gargantua, from that faraway galaxy that has landed right outside of Saturn, or right beside Saturn. So they're able to go into that, and then they go to Gargantua, and then they're able to skirt around the side of it so that way they won't get sucked into the black hole themselves. And apparently we should mention that there was several missions that had already been sent into it. And those were the Mann and Miller and I forget what several of the other ones that had they had managed to get enough information back out that they knew that they had landed, but they don't know what happened to them.
You're right.
So that's
right.
What they're going to.
You're right. We missed a very important information on that movie. The original missions was there was the Lazarus missions, right?
Lazarus. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
The Lazarus missions were the ones to first go through those to find the different star systems that had the habitable planets. And then Lazarus had to, that's where he was like, he's like, didn't Lazarus die? And then he was like, yeah, but he came back alive. But he was resurrected. He came back, and it's like, yeah, but he had to die in the first place.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite like little quote scenes from that. But they went out, and Dr. Man, and I forgot some of the other ones, where they found a galaxy that was had three planets that were possible hospitable places, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, inhabitable.
Inhabitable, possible, yeah.
Yeah, inhabitable planets.
That's what it was, inhabitable. Okay. Jeff, do you remember the name of the new missions that they were sent out when they had the container, when they were taken off?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I think it was Endurance was the name of the spaceship.
It was Endurance. Yeah, okay. The shuttle.
Correct. But was Endurance the actual name of the actual mission too?
Well, I think, yeah, it was the Endurance. Yeah, they were on the Endurance because I believe, right? Is that Cyber?
Endurance is the spaceship that they dock to when they shuttle to it when they first launch Earth. Like
yes, Endurance is the name of the spaceship. That's not the name of the mission.
Yes.
Okay. I'm getting confused. Was there a name of the mission from this one?
I'm looking.
I feel like it was the Endurance, but
I'm looking.
Jeff, Google it. Either way, we'll move on to the next part while you look that up, Jeff. one of the scenes that I liked, I'll ask you about somewhere around there. When the gentleman, he has like, he kind of has a headache or he has some anxiety, and Matthew McConaughey puts those headphones on him and it's just the thunderstorm. And then they give you that beautiful like visual of like space, but with like the rain and the thunderstorm. Do y'all remember that part?
I don't remember that. That's weird.
Yeah, so there's a part on there where he's having some anxiety. And he's like, here, you know, these are familiar sounds to you. Because I guess they've already been months in space. And so he puts the headphones on him. And it's the sound of like rainforest, rain, and thunderstorm. And then they give you this beautiful like picture of just outer, like in the black outer space with like Saturn in the background with like rain and thunderstorm. Mm-hmm. And it's just quiet, like it's just a very interesting sound with the image that are not connected, but like with them put together, it was great. You should, if you haven't seen it, you just gotta look up that part and you'll see it. It was well done. Mm-hmm. Just for a small part, it was well done.
Yeah, sometimes little moments like that are special in movies, you know.
Absolutely, for sure. What's going on, Joel? Welcome. I see you lurking.
Joey, the whole thing is called Endurance. You're right.
It was, right? Okay.
The entire thing is called Endurance. The mission, the spaceship is all the Endurance.
That's what I thought. I'm just remembering that from the when they find him at the, like, fast forwarding it, they find him at the end and they have the, in the ship, they have the, where it shows the Lazarus missions and then it shows the Endurance like at the bottom or somewhere at the end of the movie where they show those parts. What did you think when they finally got to that solar system and they went to that one planet where every 30 minutes was 7 years? Is that right? It was every 30 minutes was 7 years.
That was Miller's planet. It was the all water planet. Yeah. That had the huge tides on it and whatnot and everything. And, yes, it was 23 years, right? Or something like that per hour.
Seven years per hour.
Seven years. That's what it was.
Yeah, it was 23 hours that passed.
Yeah, so they were down a couple hours, yeah.
What did Renee, what did you think of that concept of the idea of like he was literally orbiting the planet, but they were sent down there. And the fact that time was just so different down there, like, I mean, what did you think of that idea? Wasn't that like just kind of mind blowing?
It is mind blowing. And, you know, it's a very, very real thing. This was part of Einstein's special relativity that we now have, it has since been proven that the further out you are, or the closer into a gravitational body you are, the slower time runs. The further out you are, the slower time. They have done with these highly precise clocks that they have now. I mean, they can get it down to just
like atomic. You talking about atomic?
Yeah,
clocks?
Atomic clock. Whatever. Just minute, the smallest unit they can measure. People that are orbiting are actually, if you're in an airplane or if you're in a tower several stories above somebody, time is actually going a little faster, I believe, or maybe it's a little slower for you. But anyway, the two astronauts that are twins, they sent one of them, I've forgotten their, golly, I can't think of their names right now, but one became a senator. And one is still an astronaut. And he, the one who was not a senator, he went up on the space station for like a year. And then they measured using these atomic clocks, both wore at the same time. It's only just like with a few seconds, but he is now, there's that much difference in their age, you know.
Yeah, it's like it seconds, originally. Seconds in difference. Mm-hmm. I think they do the same thing with like a speed. Yeah. Like if you like one person's like standing still, another person's on like a train going 500 miles per hour or something crazy speed, and then when they meet back up, the time's slightly different.
Well, the faster you're going, the faster you're going, the more you can diminish gravity. See, because we keep going back to this idea of gravity. So what's happening when they go down on that planet, because that particular water planet is closer to the singularity, where all gravity is being sucked in, it's making the time run much faster for the guy, or let's put it this way, those 3 hours is going to be the 23 years out in orbit where the Endeavor is at. See what I'm saying? That's how great that gravity is, that it can distort, it's called time dilation, that it can delay time that much. We're on Earth, it's just going out now. So going to the moon is only going to do it just a few seconds. But anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very mind-blowing. Very mind-blowing. And that was like, that was one of Einstein's, that was his special relativity that he, famous papers when he wrote three landmark papers in physics and quantum mechanics back in 1905, I believe.
Oh, wow. Cyber. During that time on that scene, what were some of your thoughts on that?
On the Aqua Planet scene?
Mm-hmm. On Aquaman's planet.
I said Aqua Planet, sir, but anyways. That was a very interesting sequence because there was so much that went on in that whole entire sequence. But at the same time, I found it kind of boring. And it just when watching it, sitting there, I was watching it. I didn't have a chance to see this in theaters either. I saw it on either streaming or I rented it. I can't remember exactly. But I just remember thinking that there was a lot of good like dialogue that was going on. But at the same time, I just found it so boring. And I thought there could have been a little bit more action and stuff like that. Yes, on the water planet.
Really? So you don't remember him watching riding the wave, that humongous wave in the spaceship, like they're on a surfboard?
Yeah, I remember that. I found that boring.
Okay, all right.
And I just thought that it could have been a lot more. I mean, I just think that there could have been a little bit more action sequence. Like as we go, after we get past the sequence, there's so much that.
The what?
Oh, he froze up. You froze. Like,
I think Cyber got stuck in like the in Gargantua.
He got stuck into a black hole.
He got stuck in time. Yeah. Oh man, he was just about to get to the good stuff too.
This would be a perfect.
Anyway, I love this. I love this. That humongous wave.
And it froze on you good, man. It got you real good.
Yep. Oh well.
No, say it again.
How was the trip? How was the trip?
It was a good trip.
The internet gods got you real good right now. Finish what you were saying, though. I was listening. I was listening.
Did you experience that same situation as Matthew McConaughey at the end of the movie Coop, like where he was in that library with the books and all that shit and all that? Was it like that?
Exactly like that.
Except no, I was just, Matthew McConaughey in that scene. And I was like, don't leave Murph, Alex, yeah. Don't leave Ron.
To put it blankly, I feel that Nolan could have cut this scene a little bit and moved the story on a little more faster. I think it was just a little too extended, this whole sequence. And that was my overall thoughts on that sequence.
Okay, well, you know what? I mean, that's fair. You know, I personally think it, I mean, it wasn't a bad scene. I think it was kind of important to the scene. It might have been boring because it didn't have like a total suspense in it. Well, I mean, it had a little bit, like Renee was saying, with like the wave. And then they had the Hans Zimmer music, the bang.
And one of the astronauts got killed.
I mean, it was a quick, exciting part of it. And then there was some, I just cannot think of the right words all the time. There was some consequences.
That was Doyle that died, I think, at that point. That was actually Doyle. And that was, believe it or not, at that time, I hadn't seen him in a long time in the movie when this came out. That was Wes Bentley. Who actually was like a breakout, almost like sleeper breakout in that 2001 Kevin Spacey.
I just film remember that came him, out. And all I remember him from is American Horror Story. That's all I remember him from.
Yeah, he was his first role ever was American Beauty with Annette Bening and Kevin Spacey that won the Oscar.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now I remember.
But going back to that scene before we leave it, I mean, there was consequences to that scene. There was extra time they had to stay there when she decided not to to get into the ship quicker because she wanted to go after retrieve the data. You know, that caused them to be there longer. By the time they got back and they got out of there, it was 24 years. 24 years. Remember, he's thinking about his daughter going back.
23 years. And what's his name? Romley that stayed on the ship aged the whole 23 years when they came out.
Yeah, I mean, that idea is wild. Imagine being that guy, Renee, waiting there.
Yeah, I mean, the time that he had to spend by himself and just, you know, he did say that he went under a couple of times, but, you know, I think he was mostly awake. But he was studying. He was a scientist, and he was studying the black hole that whole time. And he, what he learned during that time is what they were then able to do to figure out how they're going to survive this.
Yeah.
So there was a very very good scene where they get back on the ship and they're after being almost drowned. And Coop says, well, why in the world was the Miller's, why was her ship still there? Why hadn't it been spread out? You know,
yeah, they got here so long ago.
Right. And Hathaway said, no, for her, it was just a few minutes ago.
That's, you know, it had wild.
Just happened. It had just happened.
And that's wild, right? When they explained that.
Yeah.
That's just mind blowing. Yeah. Then the cyber. I see you, Cyber.
Gesundheit.
Bless you.
Thank you.
They go to that. How did they decide to pick that one planet? Do you remember? Remember they had a choice because there was two planets left.
I think. Well, basically, what ended up happening is they figured out which one would be easier to get to going around Gargantua because they came across the whole slingshot idea, and so that's how they discovered which one they could go to.
Plus, man, it was manipulating the data.
Yeah. Well, then next they went to man's planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He put out a distress call.
It wasn't a distress call. It was a beacon saying that they had, that it was potential for life.
He had put out a beacon.
Right.
With the false information
Right. Yeah. They get there and then, I'm trying to remember. Is this where you find the plot twist where, like, they the scientists lied about that they would never, there was never a plan B? Remember that part? There's a plan A and a plan B?
I think that comes a little later. That comes after man's planet.
Okay.
After they come back from
that. But man was there. So I think while they're in that planet is when it happens, because he was there and he was like, do you know what he's talking
about? You're right. You're right. Yeah. He says there was no plan B. There was no plan B.
There's always a plan A. Mm-hmm. You know, but he knew that if he told you that he couldn't get you to, you know, be at your fullest potential to, you know, do the things that need to be done that are necessary, you know, because we get held back by, you know, sentiments and stuff like that.
Well, one of the reasons, not only it would be easier for him to get there, if they could get to man's planet faster. But if they went to the Edmund's, I think it's Edmund's planet, that one, they would have taken them longer, but they was further out from the singularity, so it wouldn't have meant that much more. They wouldn't lose more time, in other words.
Well, the thing that he was thinking about is that he wouldn't be able to get back home.
Right, yeah. He was wanting to get back home before his kids died, basically. Right.
Correct, yeah. So he was,
old age.
He was thinking of that, and then he used the fact that the doctor had a thing for Edmund, mm-hmm. and that's why they shouldn't go there, because she was being biased.
Well, she was letting her heart lead. She was saying, no, I'm not making a rational decision. I'm letting my heart make this decision. Right. I feel like that if we go to it, you know, I feel this, and that was another theme that carries throughout the movie. This, how does love, you know, does love, you know, does transcends. Love transcend all? Can it transcend time, space, and gravity? You know, so that was one of that. And she said, no, I feel this love pulling me to Edmund's planet. I think that's the answer. I think we'll find it there. But then the rational decision, of course, is to go the fastest way, you know.
Right.
And whatnot. And McConaughey, even though he wants to do it, but even so, his heart pulls him to do the, but then he says the rational fast, the best thing is to go to man's planet. So, right. Yeah.
Yep. At the end, when he's in the Tesseract, he says something along the lines of, this proves that love is quantifiable.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
You know, actually a factual, exactly. Valid concept. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That is instrumental. You know what I mean? Like, right. A necessary, like,
and
in the human.
That's the key to the movie right there.
Yes. Yeah, it's one of the keys. I feel like there's several, I mean, you know what I'm saying, Renee? Honestly, I feel like there's several points that they're trying to make. Mm-hmm. By the end, you know what I mean? I don't think it's just about love and the family. I think that there's several different, you know, like things they're trying to get across. You know, the brothers.
I think the main one, I have to agree with Renee on this one, is love, because it was his love for his daughter that was the connection. And that's what ultimately, you know, led him back to wanting to go back to his daughter, to see his daughter. That was the reason for him going through the black hole.
Because he realizes once he's in the Tesseract, he realizes later that he's in control of the Tesseract, even though it's a structure that the aliens or whoever had provided for them. He doesn't understand it, but he realizes he can control it. Yeah,
yeah, he knew that those were human beings at that point. He knew that those were an advanced race of human beings that had designed all this and whatnot. He had gathered.
Yeah, but they didn't know who. I mean, we still don't know who that alien race was.
At one point, they don't know who they are, and it doesn't really tell you either. There's only that one point where when he's in the black hole that he's talking to Tars, I believe it's Tars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right? Tars. And, oh, by the way, those robots are awesome. I really like the robots.
I love them.
I do, too. I enjoyed them, you know. when he's in the black hole and he's in that, he doesn't understand. He even said, they make it, you know, easy to understand for us as a viewer to explain it. They explain a lot of things for the viewer in this movie, mm-hmm. which is great, you know. You know, he's like, I don't understand. What is this? He goes, this is a simulated version of time and space through your daughter's room. All the times and instances, you know, where you can communicate. They're trying to communicate to your daughter, but they don't know how, you know. And he's like, well, I know how, with love, you know. Gravity's the only thing that transcends everything.
J-Ren, that part of the scene for me really made it for me. The fact that Tars was there and that was who the last person was, or the last, you know, entity was for Coop to talk to at that point to go back and forth with and whatnot happened to be Tars. That was the connection. That was the dynamic that they flushed out at the end, was to have Tars survive and be able to still communicate with him in the black hole and whatnot and everything in the Tesseract. Yeah. I loved that back and forth. I loved that conversation or whatever, and that back and forth where, you know, in a way, Coop is trying to explain to a robot, you know what I mean? Like, what the hell's going on? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that something that to the robot was not logical. Right. And Tars was voiced by Bill Irwin. Honestly, I think it's important to point out before we get too far ahead towards the end of the film that overall, this isn't just a great film, but it was great casting, really great casting, down to like the minutiae. Even the smaller roles are played, or even the smaller parts are really well played by like really well actors and actresses. And who they came up with and whatnot to go ahead and like put together for this whole cast. I wouldn't say it's like an ensemble necessarily. It's not to that degree, but it's a solid like cast that works well together and whatnot. And it works in the film.
Yeah. I'm going to pause you there. So there's a good question here on John. What's up, John? And Renee, I'm going to have. I think you can answer this one pretty good. He has a question. It says, do you consider that movie a science fiction movie or a practical science? Is real science, is it even possible?
Yes, it's this is a genre. This is a science fiction genre that's called hardcore science fiction. And it's not possible now. All this, you know, is fantastical thinking, but it's all based in real science. In other words, they're not bringing in a deus ex machina, you know, bringing God or something like that in.
Yeah. Okay.
Possibly there is an advanced, you know, this possibility that there is an advanced race of aliens out there that know this technology. We know black holes exist. We know time dilation exists. We know we can get to. We know that the by the Rosenbridge Podolsky theory of time tunnels or a black hole. What do you call them? The wormhole. They know wormholes are they're theoretically possible. So everything's based on theory that's actually out there. That's actually being worked on by theoretical physicists and astrophysicists and, interesting note that this movie was made in 2014. In 2012, the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in Switzerland hit the lowest. They hit what's called the Higgs boson. That's the they think at this point that is the fundamental building block. That was the first particle that came out of when the black hole, when the Big Bang event happened. That would have been the first particle that came out that begin to solidify, and then from that, all other particles evolved, and then became eventually became stellar matter, gas, and whatnot, and would shrink down to almost singularities, burst out again, throwing all that star matter out. As you know, we look at wonderful the satellites, the space telescopes that we have up there, the Kepler and the new one that's out there now, and the Hubble, all those beautiful, you know, that's, of course, they're adding the color and stuff into it, but that stuff is out there.
Absolutely.
This is a hardcore science fiction, still science fiction movie.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's kind of amazing, like, right now they're doing, you know, with this telescope that's taking all these like real interstellar pictures. Mm-hmm. What is it? Artemis one. Yeah. Going to the moon. Mm-hmm. Some say we're, you know, it's the first time we're going to the moon.
No. We went to the moon.
But did
in
we
1968.
But did we though?
Well, let's not get too a deep dive into that, but the empirical data.
I'm going to do a whole podcast about that.
Absolutely, but the empirical data is far, far humongously on the side that we went there. The evidence that we did not go there is at zero. So
why is it taking us 50 years to go back?
Money.
Really?
Politics. Oh, yeah. We had a lot, you know.
How come we can't go? How come we're having all these issues going back?
Money and, these rockets? Politics. I'm sorry.
And with these rockets, you would think the technology would be.
Well, of course, we've been sending stuff to Mars. We've been sending, I mean, in the meantime, we've been doing all kinds of. I'm not going to argue with have we though, because you get into that's a black hole.
Yeah.
You fall into a black hole talking about that stuff. Now, if you want to do a science show, we'll do a science show. Now we're talking about science fiction. And
absolutely.
That we didn't go to the moon is science fiction.
Oh, I would love to talk about that. I just thought I'd bring that up real quick. Since we're in the realm.
No, I'll tell you this. You know the thing that was killed me back when 9/11 happened? They flew the planes into the World Trade Center and Pentagon and whatnot.
Mm.
And horrible event. But the thing, science, because it was based in this Islamic terrorism religion, an irrational belief system. They would say, then the elite, the smarty pants people, they would say, science, we fly buildings, we fly rockets to the moon. We don't fly them into buildings. But I can't say, no, wait a minute. The V2 rocket, which was the beginnings of the Saturn V rocket, which took people to the moon, flew into buildings in London. That's what they were designed for. And the man, I bet you love Operation Paperclip, J. Rant.
I know a little
that's
bit.
That's when they, you know, a little bit about it. Yeah, that's where they got Wernher von Braun. That's the man that was the
from
father
Germany?
From Germany. He was the number one on the "we need this guy now" list, and they certainly got him. And of course, he made every effort in the world to get to the United States. You know, he wanted to get to the Americans before either the Germans killed him or the Russians got him and took him back to Russia.
So
that's the man who took us to the moon. He was very controversial. Yes, he was a Nazi. He was a member of the SS. He was also a brilliant man, and without him, we wouldn't have gone to the moon. So
a lot of good information.
Jared 2000, back to Interstellar, brother. Back to Interstellar.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry about that. Thank you, Jeff, for bringing me back.
Talk about sex, Jack.
No. That's the thing. Don't get me wrong. Like, there are things I could bring up. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, when the one guy was sitting there on the, like, for 23 years at the space station with TARS and, like, the other robot, I wonder if he was, like, you know, having sexual relations with them, possibly. You know what I mean? You never know.
Yeah, who knows?
But either way, so just
Case, to prove Casey didn't have anything to say about it.
Yeah, and Case, the other robot's name was Case. I just wanted to make it clear that I can always connect something.
Thanks for the ad, Jeff.
But when you think about the casting, this is actually interesting because this time period with Matthew McConaughey, he just come off Mud, right? Which was almost like his breakout performance after he kind of like had a kind of a rough couple of years where he'd been in some flops, you know, and like his acting itself had been questioned to something like that.
Who?
McConaughey.
Who are you talking about?
McConaughey just came off of winning an Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club, sir.
Your dormition period, Jeff.
Another smoke break, Jeff.
When did
2013.
2013 was when that film came out?
Yeah.
Okay, so he broke out then, and that was a great movie. I love that movie. I've watched it many times.
I mean, he's been on a lot of great movies.
Oh my god, he's been around for a long time.
I just got it. I got the time off a little bit.
You need to look. Yeah, you need to look at.
Hold on. No. Cyber will ruin me on this. He did go through a period there before he won that Oscar where he was not being approached for big roles and whatnot in serious films or anything like that for a while there and whatnot. He was basically being almost viewed as only capable of being in romantic comedies and things of that nature. Like, there was that kind of viewpoint with him. He proved that he could do that he could act at that point and whatnot. And then he did True Detective, which I think was a masterpiece. You know, at the same time that, you know, before Interstellar came out, he did True Detective. And that was great.
I need to look at his movies now. I need to see a list of his movies and go through that. Because, yeah, I know he's been into some romantic comedies for sure. But
and the from like 2003 to like 2010,
yes,
he was typecast.
Yes.
For romantic comedy films, because he did how to get rid of a guy in 10 days or whatever.
Good movie.
And stuff like that. And he was typecast, because he even came out in an interview stating that he had been typecast. And so when he realized that he needed to change his, you know, basically the type of films he was doing, that's when he really started getting into doing some other types of films. Even though back in the early mid-90s, he did do A Time to Kill, which was a really fantastic film.
He did Amistad too. Remember Cyber?
Yep. He did that in 97 too. Yeah, he did those back to back, actually. 96 and 97.
He was on Wolf of Wall Street?
No.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, he was. But no,
that was later.
A Time to Kill, I think, was even nominated for an Oscar for Best Picture, I think, or whatever, whatnot that year.
It was nominated.
Yeah, it was a good film.
And of course, Dazed and Confused really was his beginning point. Yes. That's where that whole, you know, right, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right came from. That's what that phrase came from.
Classic movie, man. I haven't seen that in a while.
But yeah, he did have a short typecasting period in the early 2000s before he got Interstellar, Dallas Buyers Club, and some of those movies he did right around that time that were a little more serious. And that's when he started to pivot himself, because he also did Failure to Launch in 2005 or 2006, yeah. I should say, which was another romantic comedy. And so, yeah, he was typecast for a little bit, little while there.
I'm telling you, folks.
I wouldn't say it was a slump or bad movies. These weren't bad movies.
No,
I see what you're saying. He wasn't getting the big parts like the other actors of his stature were getting at that time.
Yes, A-Rat. He wasn't being asked to be in real impact dramatic films.
He wasn't getting the Tom Cruise parts, in other words.
Yeah. I mean, if you watch the first season of True Detective, I'm telling you, him and Woody Harrelson together as partners, cops, are unbelievable together.
Oh, yeah. It's really good. Very good. Yeah, I agree.
You know, but no, besides that, I love Damon in this film as a villain, as like a sinister character. You never see Matt Damon play roles like that.
Mm-mm.
It was interesting to see him kind of like have that, you know, type of role. I thought he was great in it. And even if you also look at, like, you know, in consideration,
what's going on, Drunk Wizard?
Anne Hathaway at that point was like pretty popular. She was kind of like really hitting her stride. You know what I mean? Like, you know,
Short hair.
She had already done. She looked hot
with the short hair. She did.
Yeah, the short hair was nice. I liked it.
It
fit her.
She didn't wear any makeup either. If you notice, she looks a lot. You probably don't even know what I'm talking about, but she looks a lot like Liza Minnelli. I think I just kept seeing a lot with the short hair, the big eyes, and a little turned up nose. I kept thinking Liza, but anyway.
She showed her titties in Brokeback Mountain. They're nice.
Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, she's been there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's a good actress. She's a very good actress.
I'm sorry, you know, I don't know any of the actors in Brokeback Mountain. It's not a movie that I chose to see.
I heard you actually made your own version of Brokeback Mountain, like your own independent private one.
I bet you have a movie that you've made that would replicate Brokeback Mountain, Jeff. In your collection somewhere.
It's called Swayback Valley.
I guess so.
He said, I guess so. I might. I don't know.
Actually, to tell you the truth, I'm working on a special artistic project right now where I'm trying to put together like a blowjob compilation.
Here we go again. Here we go again.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Hey, what about McConaughey doing this?
I'd rather talk
about Magic Mike. Oh, my God. But- I thought he was gonna pull that G string off at the end.
No, but if you look at with Jessica Chastain, she was a get for them too to pull her in for Interstellar, because she was super popular like at that point. She had just broken out in the last two years or so, I believe, right, Cyber? With The Help and everything and whatnot and all that had just come out within the last couple of years.
Who?
Chastain. Hadn't she basically just broke out within like 2 or 3 years before Interstellar?
No, I mean, she was kind of becoming popular, you know, late 2000s, early 2010s. She actually had a few other films before this that were pretty popular. So,
the Help.
I mean, she's pretty kind of, she was in The Help, yeah, 2011. So, I mean, but there was a few other films that she was known for before that too, as well. But I think what really propelled her was films like Molly's Game, which she did a couple of years later and stuff like that. So I think that she was already on the rise when she did Interstellar. She just was, you know, still waiting to kind of peak.
Was she a Looper?
I never saw that.
It's a good movie. I don't remember either. But hey, anyway, going back, because now I'm getting hit in the comments here that we got sidetracked from Interstellar.
Yep, yes, we did. Thank you.
So let's go back. Liz said that every time she showed up on here, she hasn't heard anything about Interstellar, which I doubt because we haven't been off track that many times. She probably just got on and we were talking about Jeff's collection. We'll continue talking about Interstellar. Hold on, Jeff.
And Magic Mike.
Yeah, we're done talking about that. Okay, I think the last part we left off was Man's Planet. Turns out there was a plot twist. You know, man tries to kill him, to off him on that planet so he can escape. Then we get to like one of my favorite scenes on that movie, the docking scene. Remember when he gets in the ship?
Mm-hmm.
And then he's trying to dock, and he's just not listening. He keeps trying to dock, and he like, fucks everything up, and that part of that ship blows up, the interlock. And that scene with the music, I mean, just masterpiece scene.
Intense.
I mean, 5 stars out of 5 stars. I mean, just... And then he goes, and he's having to turn the ship to match the speed. And then if he doesn't match it, then he was like, he's like, it's a necessity. Like there's no choice. It's impossible, but it has to be done in order to save the human race. In other words.
And that's one of the cool things about him as a pilot is that he does everything old school. Like he believes in manually docking and things like that and whatnot. Like that's one of the things that makes him unique as a pilot. He's kind of a wild card, like an old fashioned pilot.
Yeah, stick and rudder man.
Yeah.
And talking about why this would be considered what I said, hardcore science fiction. If you notice, whenever there are any explosions in outer space, you hear no sound because there's no medium for sound waves to travel in outside of an atmosphere. So, you know, you're not going to hear. You might hear reverberations inside the ship from the pressure or whatever impact, but you're not going to have a microphone out there hearing an explosion.
That's a good point because when they show the explosion,
it's all silent and very effective.
Very true. Cyber.
Yes.
How you doing?
Good.
Excellent. I'm good. I'm glad to hear that. What was this scene boring to you? Tell me it wasn't boring.
No, this was one of like I said, after it got done with the ocean sequence, the ocean planet, that's when it really started to pick up and it was a lot more interesting for me. So I absolutely loved this scene. I thought it was really well done. I loved the explosion. I loved the whole, you know, plot twist, as you want to call it, with man being, you know, him setting this all up so they come and rescue him. And all that kind of stuff. And then ends up, you know, he ends up with, you know, within like, I think it was like, I swear to God, like 20 minutes, one person gets killed, he gets killed. And it's pretty much just Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway by that point left, you know, and it just was a really great, just action sequence. That was really fun and really relifted the film for me to keep me wanting to watch more.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Jeff, did you stay awake to this part of the movie?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I get where Cyber's coming from. I do, with the whole water planet scene, with Miller's planet and whatnot and everything. I did enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. But if there is one part of the film that is kind of like a stall, like almost like a neutral period or whatever, where things kind of get a little, you know, for a minute and slow down and kind of get a little boring, that would be one spot where it's kind of uneventful, unimpactful, really. Even when Doyle dies, it doesn't happen or occur in a way that's really impactful or remarkable. It's almost just like instant, and he's gone. He's swept away or whatever. You know what I mean? So there's no real impact or like any emotional, you know, connection to it or to the death at all. You know what I mean? But at that point, I do feel like, though, that they did a great job of piecing together this story across the film in a way that worked, like from scene to scene and whatnot, and was fluid. Even if there was that dip here or there, overall, the film works across the span of the whole film. It's entertaining. It makes sense. It's logical. There's nothing stupid going on that makes no sense or whatever. And it does continue it evolves into a positive direction. It gets better as the film gets better. It builds suspense.
For right? sure. For sure. And there's some emotion in it too. Like they build like emotion. And just to rewind back a little bit, because thinking about it, you remember when when they got back on the ship and they know he went to see all his videos that were sent to him.
Yep.
And then mm-hmm. you know, he sees his son older now, he's married, and he's like, "Hey, look, yep. this is your grandson." And then they show his daughter; she's older and she's upset, and he's just like they're bawling, yep. like gets you, you know, almost sentimental. You almost feel for him in the movie. That's how good a job they did.
His son has become trans. He's a woman now. He's a trans woman.
What did you notice? That was a kind of a heavy set Casey Affleck that played the older version of the son.
What, Jeffrey, you're right?
Yeah, all right.
What's going on, Shenanigans? Shenanigans in the chat. She said, "What the heck did you do to Renew?" I don't know what that means. Oh, what did I do to Renee? I didn't do anything to Renee. That's just her picture.
Go ahead, Joey.
Oh, I was just trying to explain to Shenanigans in the
comments. Don't know what happened to me.
Yeah.
I guess she's talking about the picture. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. She goes, "She's a skeleton."
That's not me. That's Lady Death Lady.
Yeah, that's Lady Death.
She's Lady Death Lady.
You don't get to see what she looks like. We're not blessed.
When you're a frequent guest on the Bleeding Edge, you've got to remain anonymous at some point just to even connect it to us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Renee, do you have a camera or you don't use one?
Yeah, I have a camera and I don't use one.
Why not?
That's my choice.
Okay. Would you ever consider using one?
Probably not. No. I mean, okay. I would show my face to you guys privately, but not on YouTube. No way, no how.
Well, that's a good thing we're not on YouTube.
Well, whatever you're on.
She's super focused on using her camera for her private stuff, her private videos, like me. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Well, I like. I'm a nudist, so
there you go.
That's hilarious.
Oh,
well, no wonder you and Jeff are friends. Again. I don't think you froze. That's not the internet freezing. That was just him from when you said that.
I don't know. I think Cyber just got a little too high.
Cyber get a little too high?
Cyber's one of the most sober motherfuckers you're ever meet.
And so am I.
He's just high on life.
And Jeff, that's right. What is Jeff high on?
What am I not high? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, not... I'm very consistent, like with what I take. I mean, you know, I'm very all natural. I drink alcohol and I smoke weed. So, you know, besides that, I don't fuck with anything else.
Well, that's good for you. Let's see.
Yeah, I'm not into the hard stuff.
That's the good stuff. You mean? I'm just kidding.
Nah, I'm not into all that.
Good. All right. So now we've already passed the point where. They docked, and now there's a choice that has to be made here on how they can get to the last planet. And this will go back to a part where, you know, he was checking the settings with the robot about the honesty levels. They can adjust the honesty and humor levels.
TARS.
That was pretty cool. Then he has this idea that they were going to... This is where we talked about slingshotting around Gargantua.
Yeah.
They were going to use the remaining fuel from the smaller jets or the smaller ships to help push it, to slingshot it, so that way they can get pushed out of the gravitational pull so they can get to the final planet. And one of the things he doesn't tell Anne Hathaway or... what's her name?
Amelia.
Is how they're going to get there. And during that whole scene, you know, again, the beautiful music, you know, the rockets, he turns on one rocket, it gives them that small boost. Then they turn off that second rocket. The first rocket, what, gets them around it, right? Slingshots them with the first rocket. Then the second ship is the initial rocket to push them. I won't say slingshot. That second rocket pushes them out of the gravitational pull. But in the only way they could really do that is they had to lose weight. And he doesn't tell her that part. And that's when those ships release, come off. And then that is like basically slingshots her, launches her out of the gravitational pull. That's when he goes in the black hole. We covered the Tesseract, him falling in the Tesseract, finding the the data they needed. Found the data. Mm-hmm. Was able to go into the rooms. Love, like Renee said, was probably like the main thing, the kind of the theme of it. He was able to communicate with his daughter because he had such a good love. The bond of love is what was able to transcend everything, because like the watch was, you know, he was like, she'll look at the watch and he was like, why? How do you know? And he's all, because I gave it to her. And then they go back to that, you know, that moment, all those times. And it was beautiful.
I wonder what would have happened if, like, the guy, if the father had been a deadbeat father in that situation. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, a piece of shit.
And this movie would not have turned out the same.
No, wouldn't have even gotten made.
It definitely would have not.
Yeah. No, but, J-Rant, honestly, I think at that point too, I want to say that you guys tell me, I think they do kind of give off the hint that there is in the only situation I can think of in the whole film, by that point when Coop, you know, decides to go ahead and, drop the weight and like, you know, and, you know, jettison himself to like, help her, you know, Amelia held to the planet. I think they do have like a thing going on by then. Like there is kind of like a romantic vibe going on between them. Like, you know?
Yeah, because they kind of spent some time together.
Yes.
And they, you know, they both kind of lost something, you know, people that they love, they bonded. Right. You know, she's of his time period now.
Yeah.
The people on this ship, but when he comes out of Gargantuan and out of that wormhole and he's floating and they find him, all those people are not of his time period. He's 125, I think that's what they said.
Mm-hmm.
Or as Liz goes, it says in the comments, they went through the mud together. Yes. You know, and so when he gets on the ship, you know, and his daughter is like the big deal, you know. They have her like in sleep, but they're like, you know, oh, whatever she wants, you know, we're going to do for her, because she's like basically the one who saved the human race. So she's looked at as like the savior. And, you know, he goes, he sees his daughter, who is now like 90 or 80 something years old, dying or on her deathbed with the family. You know, they don't know who he is. She doesn't, he knows his daughter, and she's like, you know, no father should, or no parent should have to see their children die, you know? And he's like, why don't, you know, and he's like, well, I don't know what to do. Then he tells her, no, you need to go with her because she's by herself, you know, and she's, you know, all alone and she needs somebody to be with her. And he's like, I think he like accepts the fact that he's kind of lost everything there, but like he knows that she had a good life. He sees all that family around her, you know, and she's like, oh, I've lived a good life. I have all my family here with me. You know, she accepted the fact that he was gone a long time ago and she moved on, and he needs to move on while he is, I guess, still young, right? Mm-hmm. In that time. Yeah. So then they show him taking off. They brought him a robot. So that way, you know, because that was like his friend, his only friend he was going to have, probably. It was. And yeah, you think about it.
That's, you know, his own. He went through a lot with him. Yeah.
Yeah. And with him leaving into that ship to go back to meet Amelia, the time is not going to be that much off from when he leaves. Hmm. He's going to get there maybe, what, like minutes or an hour later because of that time difference. Right. So it's not like she's going to be much older or anything. And if he's going to be there with her for that time period, his friend is going to be that robot and her while they're raising all those test tube babies.
Maybe they'll have a threesome, the robot.
Well, the other robot, in case is with her. Case is on Edmund's planet with her.
Is that what it was? Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, because at the end, Case is there digging dirt and doing stuff, helping her.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which I loved how they're talking about the robots, how they, at first, there's just this slabs of metal with TV screens on them. And then you see how they're put together. They're kind of like puzzle piece contraptions, and they can roll like a top or use their little forks and come out his hands. It was just very different, very inventive. I mean, but totally different from, say, like 3CPO and stuff like that. What we commonly think is a robot, and it kind of reminded me, and there was like a lot of allusions to 2001 in this movie.
Right, right.
That the monolith, that here we have this, they kind of was, I think, modeled a little bit on the monolith. And then, of course, the monolith out that circles Jupiter in that movie, that is, I guess, one of the first Stargate. That was actually traveling through a wormhole also.
Hello,
that
Dave.
Yeah, yes, yes.
I'm afraid I can't let you do that, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. We'll open the pod bay doors out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dave. Daisy. Anyway.
Great movie.
That's what they're showing there is that Stargate, and it's alluding back to that. And kind of going back to the idea of love, and I think this is where they bring it home in the film. The love, as Jeff said, is a quantifiable thing. You know, love is a thing. It is information, and everything. Here again, this is another one of those pop science fiction concepts, and it's not a concept; it's a fact. Everything is actually information. All energy is information. You know that, but our DNA is information, and that information gets copied and passed on.
Yes,
then ourselves, and then it gets copied and passed on generation after generation, and that's evolution. Of course, there's biological evolution, which is
instincts. That's where we get our instincts from.
Everything.
When we know
everything.
What a predator, when to be afraid.
Right. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff. What I'm saying that's information, and that's a real thing, and it is passed on, and it can copy and generate. Regenerate itself without us even knowing that it's happening. So
true. Liz said she also went to find out the love of her life died when she got there. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Oh, my cousin has some important information to say. He did say that his mom stood next to the microwave a lot when she was pregnant with him. I'm not sure that how that correlates with the movie, but you know, he's always bringing that useful information. Thank you. Maybe that's why you ask those kind of questions whenever you show up.
I'm sure the multiverse of madness, that's probably valuable.
Well, somebody said there's never a stupid question, but.
Oh, the saying is there's no such thing as a stupid question, only stupid people.
Oh, okay.
I think Are You On Birth Control is one of those ones that you really got to make sure that you put in there. You know what I mean? Very important.
Mm-hmm. Are you?
I mean, I'm infertile, so I don't need birth control.
Oh, okay. Well, then you got it taken care of.
Yeah, I don't have any information to fucking to spread or whatever, but not or my shit's dead.
No, it's just going to be disease now.
Oh, no.
That's information, too.
Cyber, what do you rate this movie out of 5 stars?
I give it a solid 3.
Ooh,
right in the middle.
A little low for my taste. That's okay, though.
Yeah, that's okay.
Renee, I'll ask you.
Well, I'm going to get 4 stars. And that's actually high because I'm very strict on movies. I mean, I probably only have a handful of 10s in my life. So if this were the internet movie database rating 10 stars, I would say it's a 9. But in this case, I'll give it a 4.5.
Okay, 4.5. Okay, so they're just something didn't make it perfect. I can understand, you know.
Well, it's not that. It's just Well, I mean, I can't see any faults or flaws in the movie other than there was one tiny scene where who was the astronaut with the beard that had stayed on the ship? What was his name? Anyway.
We just talked about him. Yeah, for 23 years. Yeah. What was the name of that?
I can't think of the character's name.
Who is Miller?
Miller was one of the astronauts.
Romley.
Where he's explaining the wormhole concept to McConaughey using
with the paper.
Like we've seen it 1,000 times, you know, certainly classroom, why not? I'm pretty sure Matthew McConaughey knows all that information.
Being an astronaut
and he would not have to have that concept explained to him so simply.
You know, but it was
for the audience. That's why they did that. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't for them. It was to explain to us the simpletons over here.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, I get it. Help me, your average Joey, to understand that. So,
see, I thought that was an explanation of how I could somehow manage to have sex with 2 women at the same time
with a pencil,
like, one shot,
you know, and one piece of paper and a pencil. Spooky action at a distance.
Very good, Jeff. Okay, so 4.5, we got a 3. Jeff, what's your rating?
Well, I'm going to give it a 4.75 out of 5. And okay. That is actually...
Fuck it, now we're just breaking all kinds of numbers up, right?
Yeah, 4.75, all right, and that is actually a full 3
it's
inches. A full 3 inches bigger than my erect penis, you know, is. In size of 4.75 inches, so no, I'm just joking. But no, I'm gonna give it a 4.75 out of 5. I prefer out of 10 scale, but if I'm gonna do a 5, I'll do a 4.75. It's not a perfect film, but it's a really solid film, and it's definitely well done and definitely make you think. Quite a bit, you know. It's got a lot of different, like, you know, concepts going on and whatnot. It's very interesting, you know, again, I mean, it flushes out a lot of different interesting concepts and whatnot. It's a very well done movie, a lot of great visuals. You know, we only really highlighted that a couple times, but like the visuals are outstanding,
amazing.
The actual scenes of space travel, of like launching, you know, the shuttle. Docking with, you know, initially with the initial spaceship, the different navigation and whatnot of, like, you know, the different shuttles and whatnot and space travel. I thought those scenes were all well done. They all seemed very, like, you know, authentic and whatnot to me. Overall, again, like I said, well cast movie, and the Nolan brothers just killed it with this movie.
Absolutely.
I think it would be a really good, when you think about it, it's kind of a loose trilogy. if you do Inception and Tenet, if you would watch, like, do a marathon where you sit down and watch all three movies back to back over a couple days or something, I think that would be interesting to do.
Absolutely, for sure. Just get all these type of,
because he's dealing with all these weird interdimensional concepts and whatnot.
All right, so I'm going to tell you why I'm going to give it the highest rating out of all of you guys here. I mean, not the fact that I said at the very beginning that this was one of my favorites, but there's four things that are excellent here. The first one is the acting. Second one, which is good. The second is the story. Third is the imagery. And fourth is the music. Mm-hmm. It's got all of those things in there. And because all of those things are connected perfectly, I mean, I can't complain with the movie. You know, maybe the ending, they could have done maybe a little bit more. But, I mean, you got to be happy with all of that other stuff. You know, there's some, to me, there was a lot of suspense, a lot of great scenes, emotion involved. I mean, I left that movie like satisfied when I remember seeing it. I was like, you know, one of the slow claps, but you know, those are my reasons why I think that it deserves a 5-star review.
And you know what, J-Rent, the budget on this was $165 million. Honestly, that, I mean, that is a lot of money, but when you think about what they put out in this movie, 2 hours and 40 minutes or whatever of the visuals that they put out and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
I think that's actually surprising that it's that low. And it did do 701.8 million worldwide box office. So it was successful financially.
Absolutely, for sure. I mean, I wish I will say this every single time, got to figure out how to play the trailers. But the original, I remember I was hyped about seeing this because I remember the original trailer that they played for this movie. And it had so many like flashbacks of like when we went to the moon. They did flashbacks of like older clips of like different things. Mm-hmm. And they made it really appealing to want to see from the original trailer. I would recommend you go look for the original trailer to Interstellar, the first trailer one. And then tell me what you think after, like, tell me you didn't want to see the movie after that first trailer. But John, he says, do you think there'll be a sequel to that movie? No, I don't think there will be a sequel to that movie. There's no need to do a sequel to it. It's a standalone movie. And Elizabeth, yes, that's why I wanted you to mod it, because I am, you know, technically incapable of getting things to work when I am streaming.
Can I jump in? If you like this type of movie, and you probably are familiar with it, J-Rent, and that's Ad Astra, that came out a few years ago with Brad Pitt. It's another, it's called Ad Astra, A-D, and then A-S-T-R-A. It came out in 2019. It stars Brad Pitt, Tommy Lee Jones, and basically he's, it's another hardcore science fiction, but it involves a venture that where Brad Pitt has to go to the moon, and then from the moon he takes a rocket to Mars, and then from Mars he takes a rocket out to Neptune. So I won't do a spoiler on it.
I am familiar with this movie. I don't think I've seen it though. I haven't seen it.
It's excellent. I think you'll really like it. I believe. And there is a killer moon buggy car chase shootout on the moon.
Nice. So. Okay. I might have to watch it later. Hey Jeff, I noticed you put the trailer in here. Are you gonna try to play it?
You want me to play it right now?
Yeah. Go ahead and play it. See what it does.
Yeah, anticlimactic, but go ahead.
You've got to click on it. You've got to select it.
Do you want me to do it? Okay. Well, I'm surprised you were able to add it on there. Hold on. Let's see if it'll play though. Yeah, go ahead and play it. This isn't the trailer I was talking about. There's a different one.
What'd you do, Murph?
She didn't do nothing.
Murphy's
wrong. Oh, he's dreamy.
You're a well-educated man, Coop. You're a trained pilot and an engineer. The world doesn't need any more engineers. We didn't run out of planes or television sets. We ran out of food.
Why did you give me
a
reason for the
attack?
No,
we didn't.
Reverse is law.
Reverse is law. Maybe it's something bad.
Maybe it's whatever.
Yeah.
Hey Jeff, it's a bit echoing.
It's echoing?
Yeah, you might have to turn the audio down from your computer.
Control us. Now you need to tell me what your plan is to save the world.
We're not meant to save the world. We're meant to leave it.
Jeff, look up the... Look up the first trailer. Look up the first one.
And save them.
Yeah, auto doubling. That's what it was. Very nice scene right there. Jeffrey. Does anybody call you Jeffrey?
Yes.
Okay. Look up trailer one for Interstellar.
I've got it.
Put that one on.
No problem.
That's the one that people need to see.
I'm crying.
No.
I mean, he did a really good job. I mean, he had snot coming out of the nose.
Burr.
That's some crying.
Hey, he was a good actor. Just proved to everybody.
Oh yeah, he is a good actor, absolutely.
All right, let me add it on here. Lower it just a little bit, Jeff.
No problem.
We've always defined ourselves.
Oh, echo.
By the ability to
echoing.
Yeah. But see, look at the difference in this trailer. You saw like that old clip they had on there? Look at these old clips.
These moments.
Because of his speakers, that's why it's echoing.
Yeah. Hmm? Oh, I know.
To reach the stars. To make the unknown known.
But do you see how like they play these old clips on the original trailer?
We count these moments as our proudest achievements. Having fired the imagination of a generation. But we lost all that.
Pulls into port.
There you go, Jeff.
For the last time.
Or perhaps we've just forgotten that we are still pioneers. That we've barely begun. And that our greatest accomplishments cannot be behind us. Because our destiny lies above us.
You see the difference in that trailer, though?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was just... Jeff... Thank you for playing those trailers. They actually worked. The only thing is the audio was atrocious on the stream. And that's just because of the speakers, I guess, coming through the mic.
For now on, when I come on to do the shows, I'll make sure that I use my headphones no matter what. That way, if we need to screen share the trailers again or whatever, whatnot, we don't have these echo issues or whatever.
Yeah. It looked like it worked. So, but the difference in that trailer from the first one you played to the second one. Do you see what I mean? Because that one came out and it had all those old clips, and that's what enticed me to want to see it. I was like, oh, okay, what's going on here? What's up with this, you know, pioneers, you know, traveling to the stars? And then they show like the, you know, Murph and the grandfather. You didn't know it at the time, but Murph and the grandfather holding hands, and then they show the rocket shooting up. I mean, I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah, most definitely. Good trailers, great film.
Absolutely. We made it to, you know what, guys? This is the longest podcast we've done. This is an hour and 42 minutes. It's almost as long as the actual movie.
That's about how long one of my quickies usually are.
Okay, mm-hmm. Jeff. Sure, buddy.
We're only off by an hour and 7
if you're
minutes.
If you're going at an hour and 42 minutes, you're wasting about an hour and 30 minutes of your time.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's good at foreplay. Hey.
But
might be very enjoyable. Who knows?
Yeah, Jeff. Well, I mean, Jeff's got videos, so.
I don't need to brag or like or whatever about my game or whatever. At the end of the day, all I'm going to say is that I play at essentially the highest level possible. So I mean, it's that simple. If you want to quantify it and boil it down, like that's where I'm at. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm at my sexual peak, and I've evolved my game to a place where fucking basically the only way I would not be able to satisfy a woman sexually in the bedroom would be if I just didn't do anything to her at all.
Oh.
I just didn't touch her.
You know what? Liz brings up a very good point. She's usually good at pointing out things. She's a pointer-outer person. She said there was no fun facts or trivia during this podcast. And yes, there was none. So if you guys got any fun facts... Well, no, what? Renee brought up some fun facts and trivia.
I brought up a tremendous amount.
Absolutely. I guess she's referring to me because, you know, okay. Since I was there. But yeah, you brought up some very good fun facts. Some of the fun facts that I remember that I didn't know was those videos from the Dust Bowl. Those are actual, you said those were actual videos, right? From people right. from right. the Dust Bowl. So that is a fun fact. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Liz brought
up. How did the polling work out, J. Rat? How did the polling work out?
It was Interstellar. I had probably double more votes for Interstellar. And then the Inception was second. At first, it was like kind of tied with all three, but then like I did the poll for like on my story, and then I did it to something else, and it it was more Interstellar. It was more Interstellar. Nothing else came about. I would have liked to have a zillion votes on there, but it didn't happen. I thought maybe
give it time, brother. Give it time.
Yeah, absolutely. Sign notes about the actors and stuff. I don't think Liz watched the podcast because I think we brought up a lot of sign notes about the actors.
Yeah.
And, you know, Liz,
I highlighted a bunch of them and whatnot and mentioned their names and, you know, all that.
Well, Liz must have been watching another podcast.
Yeah.
Honestly, J-Run, I think she's referring to your little cards you usually have and you give facts out. That's what she's talking about.
I know she is, and I didn't. This is a movie that I should have had some cards and facts to bring out because this is a favorite movie of mine, but I did not. I think we still talked about a lot, though, without the fun facts.
I don't know. All I know is I miss Liz. I have not spent enough time with her recently, and I miss her.
Well, she'll be on. I'm going to try to get another show in maybe this week. I'm going to try.
We're going to sneak one in, a little sneaky shit?
Well, you know, I used to do them on Thursdays, and I got away from that, and I've been consistent with you guys on Mondays. So
I remember that you when I first met you, you were doing the Thursdays.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But went away from that, been doing them Mondays with you guys. I would like to try to go back to Thursdays. Just so I can create more content. So the content that we do here, it's a live stream content. Not everybody's going to watch the hour and 45 minute live show later on. They may tune into it or pay attention to it later or listen to it later. But the only way to really entertain everybody is got to get the best clips. So, you know, I'll cut out every time I find a funny part or informational, I always cut it out and I show you guys, you know, the editing. So let's see what
you've been doing a great job.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Great job. Yeah, you have.
And, you know, let's see what we can get from this, you know, segment today and see what I can clip on and send it out into the internet world and see what sticks and what doesn't, you know?
Yeah, all the funny stuff and weird stuff you can put out there, the better.
Oh, yeah. You know, every time, though, I put something with Jeff on it, though, it seems like it gets banned. So I stopped doing that.
No joke.
What a surprise.
I've literally had two that I've posted on TikTok where Jeff talks about his experiences and they get muted. I'm like, are you serious? Out of all these things that I hear on TikTok and social media, this is what gets muted? I was like, okay, whatever. You know what? I'm gonna just look for a different route and do that. But you know, that's a whole nother story. Guys, I thank you all for being here to do the podcast. You know, I think we did a good job of covering it. I'm sorry I didn't bring up the fun facts, but
I want to thank you, if anything, Jay Rant, because for one thing, again, it's very nice that you appreciate Interstellar at the same level that I do as a film. That's always nice to hear. And I just, as always like to say, I love this outlet for me as a content creator, like, you know, in general, not just as your friend and having an opportunity to sit here and record with my friends that are all here, people that are, just so you know, people, I do have friends. All these motherfuckers here are my friends. Believe it or not, they like me somehow. I don't know why, but they do. at least they pretend they do. Either way, I get to come on here and like talk about different stuff, man, other than Marvel and like the MCU, you know what I mean, for a night, you know, and it's fun, man. It's enjoyable. And if anything, it's sort of like an outlet for me, you know, kind of like what the Podcast of Champions used to, you know, be for me in a way. So, you know, it's nice to have something like that to like look forward to on Monday nights.
Yeah, absolutely. Renee, thank you for joining us tonight. And I appreciate some of the facts, fun facts that you brought to this podcast.
You're welcome. They might not have been too, maybe they weren't that fun for some people.
No,
it's very informational. I like
it's that, because,
you know,
look,
you know
it's because I got these, Liz.
Oh, okay.
My girlfriend got me this, and it's got empty cards. And what I've been doing on some of the other shows, I've been, you know, doing some research on Google and getting at least 10 of these filled out with different things for movies. You know, like,
you know, I'll add something, another fun fact. If you look at how they did the Gargantua, the black hole singularity,
mm-hmm.
with the event horizon going around and everything, that I think that was the first time it had ever been done like that, and it's been copied ever since. So really? Whoever came up with that concept, that was another fun fact, the technical advisor on this movie was a PhD physicist at Caltech called Kip Thorne.
Yeah. Yeah,
he was very close friends, very very close friends with Stephen Hawking.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's cool.
That's right. And Linda Obstett and him were the ones that actually came up with the premise for Interstellar from Jump.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh wow, good information. So
they collaborated. They collaborated on the film Contact together. They worked out together on Contact.
A good movie,
right? Another movie that's, I don't know if you have you done that one.
I have not, but that's the one with Jodie Foster, right?
Mm-hmm. And Matthew McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey. Yeah, that's right.
Very, very. He's a sexy priest in this movie.
That's such a good movie. It's another good one. And it's like, well, this one's more with like aliens, right?
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah. And she sees
that. No alien. Well, no, we didn't really. The only really bad guy was just another human. The only evil part, and he wasn't really evil. He was just fucked up.
Yeah, it was really, the whole story was kind of fucking stupid, to be honest with you. Like, to tell you the truth, at the end of the movie, like the way it played out, and Jodie Foster was like a little underwhelming in that film as far as like her performance. I'll put that out there too. And I like Jodie Foster.
Yeah, no, it was a good movie, and that's actually a good one to cover as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll write that down.
Jodie Foster is one of those actresses where depending on the role that you put her in as a leading actress, she can be really good. But in other films, she's better off as like a secondary actress. I think she plays that better than she does like as the feature, you know, of the film. You know what I mean?
I thought the best, but really the guy who just really stole every scene, and that was John Hurt playing that Haddon, the entrepreneur who's financing all this space, the gadget or whatever they build to shoot him off into the wormhole. I forget what the name of it is, but anyway.
Yeah, all that ring, that ring thing.
Yeah, that ring, that machine they built, whatever it was called.
Hold on, I gotta acknowledge Drunk Wizard. Wizard, I ain't ignoring you, buddy. I'm so sorry. I try to catch the comments as they come, and you know, I gotta acknowledge Liz. You already know that when she speaks.
Drunk Wizard, don't let your alcoholism make you overly emotional, motherfucker. Come on now.
So is Nancy Downs, my two faves. What? Jack Sparrow is a great actor, though. Oh, okay. Oh, I get it. You're talking about the actors that you like. Oh, okay. Sorry, my bad.
Drunk Wizard is so drunk all the time that you never know when he might get emotional on your ass.
The movie is called Contact. Yes. Didn't we say that it was called Contact? We didn't say it wasn't called Contact. Thank you, John, for acknowledging that it is called Contact.
John's timing is great.
Yeah, very wait, good. That was a little late on that. Yes. Cyber, any words of wisdom for us before we bid us adieu?
Final words of wisdom. Well, children out there in the great land of Facebook, remember, sci-fi is a wonderful and amazing genre that there's so many great sci-fi films. As Renee quoted earlier, Loki's mom, about Ad Astra, definitely, if you enjoy Interstellar, definitely check out Ad Astra because it is very similar in the context of this film. Tommy Lee Jones is fantastic in the film. Mm-hmm. But if you are a sci-fi fan, I recommend many of these films. Elysium, District 9, very great films. All should check them out. And Interstellar, of course, is a very unique film, another Christopher Nolan film that is highly regarded, was nominated and won Best Visual Effects in 2014, and is just a all-around interesting film. If you have not seen it, we highly recommend you guys check it out. It's a very, very interesting film.
Cyber, thank you so much for that. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you for the extra films to give out to the world to consider watching. Jeff, thank you again. Renee, thank you again. And this is the end of the Podcast Odyssey. We will see you guys later. See y'all later.